Welcome back to another episode of Firewall. As usual, I'm your host, Bradley Tusk. With me today is a guy who I've only known for maybe 3 or 4 months, but is really interesting and does a lot of really weird, cool stuff, so much so that I asked to join us on the podcast, and he graciously agreed. So, Brady Watkins, thanks for joining us.
Bradley, thank you very much. Happy to be here.
Yeah. So you have this big job right now where you run SoftBank Robotics America. But the thing that you're famous for, and I think my 11-year-old probably loves you for, is you're the one that kind of brought Assassin's Creed into the public consciousness and into everyone's homes. What was that like?
Well, first, you know, let me know what the gamer tag of your 11-year-old is, and we'll go see if we can't do some multiplayer action here after okay. the conversation.
He's actually, the Spider-Man 2 game is supposed to arrive today, and every morning he's been waking up and saying, like, 3 more days, 2 more days. So he's ready for it to come this afternoon.
Oh, can't wait. And I love that. And I think for me, you know, the power of what was video games and why did I get involved in it, I think there's actually a parallel to, you know, how robotics came into my life. So when I first looked at the video game industry and what that was like, you know, what I love to do is this idea of how do we commercialize one-of-a-kind experiences? And to do that, how do I combine it with cutting-edge development and technology? So this idea of development, tech, people, and experience was really important. And when you think about video games, you've got hardware, software, and you have some amazing talent in the industry, you know, $140 billion industry. But it's really all about creating experiences and bringing passion to the players, just like your son and millions of others. And that was what drew me originally to the opportunity and being able to create brands, being able to create these experiences, I found a passion. And then when I took a step back and based on that passion, kind of looked out and said, well, you know, where else can we find similar experiences? And you wouldn't necessarily think robotics and video games have parallels. But when I started to look at this idea of virtual, physical, hardware, software, and experiences, and then combining with world-class partners, you really start to see a similarity in how we solve solutions at scale. So SoftBank, particularly in SoftBank Robotics, looked across and said, wow, here's an organization that looks very different, but actually feels right at home to a lot of the things that I found passion and mission critical in developing that experience. So collaborating and understanding how physical, digital, hardware, software, and experience come together, and how do we do that on a commercial scale has been and will continue to be my passion, and how kind of we connected, you know, Assassin's Creed all the way back to robotics. And in this talk, we'll talk about Wiz a little bit, but actually autonomous vacuuming robots.
Yeah. So let me start with a kind of stupid question, but what's a robot? Like, why, how is a robot different than like just a machine?
Well, it's actually a really good question. So any robot, its main goal is how do I automate tasks? So really we always start, and this will probably be a theme as we get into the conversation, is let's think not tasks, not technology or equipment. What tasks do I need to accomplish? And based on those tasks, which ones are pervasive, which ones are repeatable, and where is there an opportunity to create efficient execution of the task? And that's very much the difference between a robot and maybe another piece of equipment. Is the sole goal is how do we create efficiency within specific tasks, and do that very often in both a physical and a digital format. So a robot is often connected. A robot is often focused on task delivery and really creating efficiency in any environment. Efficiency in your personal life, some robots that you've engaged maybe you didn't know about, and efficiency in your professional life in terms of creating value for both yourself or your clients, depending on what area or profession you're in.
And of the different robots you have, which is the one that's kind of most human-like?
So Pepper is our humanoid robot. So Pepper was actually one of the first robots and one of the things that drew me to the organization, really trying to solve an amazing problem, which is how do you create a connection in a professional environment and allow people to really drive customer service? So customer service as a capability actually is pretty consistent. So when we walk up to any area, how do we make sure we're driving the right experience? I have questions. I need navigation. I need to deliver a value add. Creating a form factor that is humanoid in nature allows for continuing a conversation and then carrying you through to the result. So it's a really tough problem. And we sort of took the hard problems first with Pepper. But it was amazing in its ability to do that. And again, it was collaborative. How do we leverage a humanoid robot to help take part of the process and the task and then make that efficient and then allow not only the client or the customer, but also the workforce to be able to do higher value tasks now that we sort of remove that capability.
So when you have a humanoid robot in a new area that hasn't been done before, is all the previous learnings from kind of other sectors enough that you kind of know how this humanoid robot should deal with actual human beings? Or is it kind of an open question each time?
There are always some historical. So it's really important no matter what that we leverage where we've been to know where we're going to go. That's first step. But I think in the same way you look at any other human interaction or collaborative effort, it's really about getting in and understanding and sort of doing versus just thinking. So today, even when you interact with, say, Siri or Alexa, there's a learning curve that needs to happen in terms of how you interact that you really can't assess until you just get out there and interact. So I think the focus and really where we have passion is how do we get robotics out into the marketplace, engage with a use case, engage with the workforce or a client, and then make sure that we're digesting and reacting. So understanding the real use case, not the theoretical, and then evolving is always a successful model. And I think where a lot of robotic companies should go, wanted to go, and are going. And the good news is technology continues to evolve to allow us to be more dynamic, more modular in how we are approaching, which makes it really fun. I mean, just think about 4 years ago, if you said that you would be talking to your kitchen and asking it to set a timer, everyone would have thought you're crazy. But now if you look at the, you know, Siri, Alexa, and the integration of how we engage robotics, not only in our day-to-day lives, but starting to see it in professional, it's almost considered mainstream. And how would you do, you know, how would you perform in your kitchen without being able to talk to your voice controlled, speaker?
So I'm sure there are people listening to this who are saying to themselves, okay, fine, but I'm not really worried about how the robot interacts with me. I'm worried about the robot replacing me.
Yeah.
What do you say to those people?
Well, and first I think we're going to go back to, I always focus on the task, not the replacement. So what we know, and particularly in the professional environment, is there are a multitude, tasks are never going to go away. There are always a multitude of tasks. What we're after is where the pervasive tasks that we as humans don't want to do, where are the ones where we create an efficient execution of those tasks, we're now creating productivity. And when you take away certain pervasive tasks, what happens is it opens up the opportunity for humans, which have a higher fidelity than robotics. How can we as humans take on those higher fidelity tasks? So very often, once you remove the low fidelity tasks that you didn't want to do, higher tasks are always there. And that's where we have the collaborative effort of robotics working in concert with people and jobs, is the job is always going to be based on where are their tasks. And throughout history, we found as you start to take pervasive tasks into technology and automate them from efficiency, all of a sudden you have all these amazing tasks that are available. And across all professions, it's not just high-tech professions, but just about every industry you go into, once you create an efficient task delivery, all of a sudden more tasks were always there. They now just become available and accessible to the workforce. And that's where job evolution happens.
So what do you need to do to convince, I mean, that all makes sense to me, but like, to convince people that, because there are obviously people who either don't believe that, or, you know, people in labor unions for whom them keeping their own jobs requires them to fight what you're doing and dispute it, because the more of a danger you seem like, the more they're needed.
The first step is let's put it into action. So I think what we're comfortable with is let's go work together. So let's deploy the robot in an opportunity and let's lean in on making sure that we maintain the workforce and expand the task, and that we actually work in concert. What we've actually found is when we talk practically about application, very often once we're investing in the task, we actually see the workforce improving and expanding. So the idea of, wait, you're delivering a task I really didn't want to do anyway, it shows that my company or the client is investing in me. It's allowing me to do other work that I'm really passionate in. And it's allowing me to show pride in my overall job and work, because now I don't have to do these tasks I really didn't want to do anyway, but I'm now creating higher value. So my pride in work actually goes up, productivity actually increases, and we actually find other tasks to help make the overall experience more efficient. So my answer is more, let's try. And when we lean in, what you'll find is actually we're able to expand the workforce capability through level up. So, hey, now you are managing a fleet of robots. So maybe you went from, we talked from cleaning, a janitor. Now you're a robot technician, managing a fleet of robots to help. And that investment in pride of work is extremely important. We don't talk about it enough, but having that pride of delivery and having an investment where maybe there wasn't technology investment before creates this whole new opportunity of the workforce evolving itself to be more productive, more successful, and evolving with innovation. So it's not left behind. It's actually catapulting the workforce by taking these pervasive tasks and moving it to robotics.
And so how do you know which kind of robots will work and which won't? Walmart, as I'm sure you know, recently said that they're going to scale back some of their robotic usage and switch back to human labor. When you're thinking about what products you want to build, what's the kind of intellectual framework for it?
That's a good, and I think the Walmart example is interesting. So the first one I would take is, so they have in one area, they are maybe balancing back to, hey, there's a more efficient way to do it in one area from an inventory management or collection. But another area is, say, in cleaning, they're actually increasing their use of robotics to be able to do automated cleaning with scrubbers. So you kind of have to see, I think the area is, let's find where's the inefficient task and where can we evolve that task? So I'll use Wiz as an example. Let's just go to cleaning. What we're actually saying today is in order to create a safer, healthier work environment, we have to actually increase the frequency. We have to change the delivery to be more consistent, more frequent. By changing that delivery, that's where a robot can be more efficient. If there already is an efficiency that's there, there already is an ecosystem on delivering continuous replenishment, continuous solution that's at its point of efficiency, that's not necessarily the right area. So robotics needs to focus on use case. So if we have an area where we're not creating continuous execution, that's an area where robotics plays a really good role. If you already have continuous delivery with a workforce, I think we're just creating robotics for robotics' sake, and we have to evolve that and make sure we're really focused on an evolved problem. So where is there a pervasive task we don't want to do, and how do we, by expanding that or making it more consistent, increase the frequency, and maybe there's not a proof of performance? Those are kind of the three triggers that I look for when we're trying to find where robotics can create value in any profession or ecosystem.
So where does safety fit in? So, for example, you guys created a vacuum cleaner robot that a global pandemic hits, really seems to sort of bolster the use case for what you've developed. What are the cases where you think about, hey, this is something where the risk to human lives in whatever expecting oil rigs or whatever it is, it is too significant, and therefore we're better off with robotics, which obviously can't catch a disease and get sick. How much does kind of health and safety factor into your thinking?
I think it's one of the top two reasons to think about investing in robotics. So when we look at the pandemic today, health and safety is a number one investment. So when we look at a return to work format, the only way that we can feel comfortable returning to work and for our workforce, both the tenants that are in the built public spaces that we're cleaning and in the workforce that is supporting the cleaning, how do we confirm that it is healthy? And confirmation and proof of performance is actually, you know, that's a gap that very much robotics and technology can close. So every CRHO in America right now is trying to figure out how can I prove and provide a healthy and safe environment that is always ready. And so I think what happens when you bring this unseen pandemic, right, you can't see the virus, but you know that it's there. How do we get confirmation that we're creating that consistency? So we know every time someone touches a railing, we have to clean it. Every time someone walks around a floor, we need to make sure that we've sort of followed that up with some sort of sanitization. Doing that requires technology and data to provide that performance. So when we think about how do we solve this problem of how do we know that it's safe and healthy, incorporating technology, incorporating the workforce, and incorporating robotics to up the frequency and consistency of collection is mission critical. I don't know another way of how we're going to be able to accomplish that. If the ask is, how do we ensure consistent, safe environments for the workforce, workers, and tenants without leveraging technology, data, automation, and frequency to be successful. And that's exactly where robotics has been here to help for 100 years. And I think now we're just moving it in based on the pandemic to a collaborative effort around health and safety. So I think it was always on the mission. I think we just accelerated that with the pandemic, which is unfortunate, you know, for the economics. But I think it just shines light on an opportunity for technology to be able to provide value.
And do you see more and more businesses asking, how can I reopen safely if I were to use robotics? And do you think in 100 years we look back at COVID as, you know, a terrible thing that happened, but yet the moment that kind of opened people's eyes to how they should be working with robotics?
Yes. And so I the very simple explanation is I think this is like an iceberg, right? Before the pandemic, we only saw a certain part of the iceberg that was above the waterline. And I think what the pandemic has created is asking questions of let's look at what's, you know, the water level receded for a lot of reasons, but now what we're seeing is more of the iceberg exposed. How do we solve these problems that maybe were already there, but we now have an opportunity to really attack it? And I think that's what we, you know, as an economy do really well. Once it's visible, how do we approach and solve the problem and start to look at all of the available tools? So we do see companies asking questions. I think they were always asking, how do I make it safe for my employees? I think it's just now more prevalent. And when you ask the question, what we're doing is maybe you didn't think about robotics in an environment of safety as much as you would have before. So it's really just shining light on technology that's been around and solutions that have been around. It's now just front and forward as a priority. So I think it just became more of a priority today, but it was going to be a priority. So to your question, in the last 100 years, I do think, you know, just like this is considered a, you know, 100 year, 2020 will go down in history as, you know, the one of one scenarios that happen only every 100 years. And I think this will be a pivotal moment where people just ask the question of how do I make it safer? How do I avoid and how do I make it more, you know, consistent for the workforce and my workers, my employees going forward.
Do you think the work from home trend continues even once there's a vaccine? And if so, either are you guys already thinking about robotics that would serve that demographic? Or if you're not yet, do you think you will be?
Well, I think the pendulum is swinging back in the other direction. I think initially when we had the pandemic, the goal was prevention, because there's no treatment. So prevention is let's all go work from home. I think what we're seeing in every survey that we have actually is that people, as well as companies, want to work together. And there's a lot of studies that are coming out now that are very concerned about the loss of productivity and innovation that very often comes with collaboration in the same room. So that chance passing of brainstorming very often happens in a person-to-person or an in-person environment. Reed Hastings actually was one to come out, one of the first people to say, you know, without being in person, I lose productivity and I can't be creative. So I and we at Netflix are making sure that we're investing both in allowing work from home, but more importantly, how do we bring back that innovation, productivity, and creativity that needs to happen face to face? So they're thinking about how do I design an experience that makes that happen? And I think that's important because Netflix actually had one of the highest worker happiness survey scores of any company. So not just because it's Netflix for the sake of a tech company, but more importantly, they focused on how do I make sure I'm constantly driving innovation? And we really see that happening across the board. All the surveys, you know, most want to go, we're social beings. We have a herd mentality. We get energy from engaging together and drive productivity. So there's a desire to go back. The challenge is just how do I make sure that it is safe to go back and how do I design my experience around that health and safety? So this is exactly the type of opportunity that technology and robotics and automation can work collaboratively with, you know, with the workforce, with humans, is to figure that out. So I think it's the myth that work from home is 100%. I think what we're going to see is that the opportunity is we need to maintain innovation and productivity at scale. And to do that, we need interaction to drive that. And now the question is, how do we support that or design an experience to facilitate?
So SoftBank's got to be an interesting place to work. And you've got this larger than life CEO, but I think most people listening to this podcast, because you know, most are in the tech world, really think about the Vision Fund when they think about SoftBank. What's the overall interaction between the different parts of the company, and how does sort of SoftBank Robotics fit into the larger picture?
Yeah, it's a really good question. So at first, it is an amazing experience and ride. And I think it does start with Masayoshi Son from a leadership perspective. And first for him, his goal and mission is, how do I actually leverage technology to create value for humans? So interestingly, his number one mission is, I want to create and provide a safer, more valuable experience for humankind. And how to do that is leveraging investments and opportunity and operations around artificial intelligence, technology, robotics, communications. So this investment in technology, communication, and the overall output of that for the benefit of humans is a really powerful mission, and one that he has, you know, a 30-year, 100-year, and even 5-year look in view. And the Vision Fund was an extension of being able to achieve that through an investment in venture capital arm. SoftBank Robotics is one of the few companies that has the SoftBank name. And that was specific because robotics was a mission critical application. So we think about what is the physical manifestation of a lot of this value to humans? And how do we make artificial intelligence feel real? How do we drive communications and connectivity? So what was important is to have a robotics capability that would bring that to life in a physical format was mission critical. So we're very humbled by the fact that we carry the SoftBank name in our mission, and that we're a part of the strategic initiatives and long-term investments that do one focus, is we need to provide value to humankind. And I think we take that very seriously, and everything we do is a collaborative effort with people, as well as future value.
And how much can you work kind of across the portfolio? So for example, can you use the vacuum cleaner robots to clean WeWorks? Or, you know, when you think about how to deploy or how to develop, how much do you think about all of the other businesses that SoftBank either owns or has invested in or has some stake in some way?
We constantly are thinking and collaborating. So I would say the collaboration between all of the organizations within SoftBank is very high. And really our core base is, are we solving a use case? Are we creating value? And are we creating more value if we collaborate together versus not? And it's really that simple. And very often what we're finding is wherever we can expand value, all organizations collaborate and scale very quickly for an intent. And if we can't now, then we know that there's a future integration point. So to me, it's often about timing value, but in terms of the ecosystem, we have what an amazing opportunity and different positions. So whether it's WeWork, whether it's artificial intelligence, but having access to the type of portfolio and information is, we would be silly not to collaborate. But we also would not be doing our own due diligence if we didn't focus on use case. So that's how we think about collaboration. I think that's what I found is amazing and consistent across the board, is use case, client, you know, customer client experience first. And then from there, we can always build back scalability, collaboration, and connectivity, given we have sort of a single mission driven from the top.
All right. So last question. You mentioned earlier that 2020 is kind of one of one in terms of being an incredibly unique year, or maybe, you know, the kind of thing that happens once a century. You know, we're nearing the end of the year. Seems like, you know, we have a result in the election. Seems like there's a vaccine that should be in production pretty soon. What does 2021 look like for you, and how are you thinking about it?
I think above all the things you mentioned is, I think we now are starting to have a pathway. I think we can see where we're going. Is not only do we have a vaccine, but when we think about what's in front of us, it's really now, how do we create the new normal, and then how do we execute against the new normal? So I see 2021 as just executing against a new normal trajectory. So based on the vaccine, how do we continue to focus on health and safety? What we know 2021 will be is, how are we ensuring that everywhere I go is safe? So how is COVID now not part of my ecosystem? I want to travel. I want to go back to work. I want to go create a retail experience. If I go to a hospital, how do I am assured that I'm not going to be in a more precarious situation than when I started? So I think 2021 is about creating that confirmation of clean, confirmation of safety, and health. So I think that's the theme. How are we going to be a part of it? I think, you know, where we're always going to be is robotics is, hey, we're going to help continuously collect. I think in our case, continuously collect allergens, dust, debris. Part of, you know, vacuuming and what we do is making sure that it's a cleaner environment on a continuous basis. We're going to continuously collect data to show proof of performance. So I think we're going to be a critical part of ensuring that by the end of 2021, everyone will feel very confident that their public space that they go into, no matter their profession, is going to be safe for them to do what they want to do, which is, you know, provide value, work, innovate, be prideful in what they're doing, you know, in their professional career. And that's what I'm excited about, is how do we help the overall workforce return to maximum productivity, and doing that by leveraging technology and continuous delivery of a confirmed clean.
Well, it's a vision that everybody would be pretty happy to sign up for right now. So yes. Hopefully it happens. Brady Watkins, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Bradley. Appreciate the time. This was fun. Thank you.